Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Well, hello once again, global listeners, and welcome to this iCoder podcast. In fact, the first iCoder podcast for 2023. I'm Ian McDuff, your host, as always, and speaking with you from Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. My best wishes to you all for 2023 and also for the commencement of the Chinese New Year, the Year of the Rabbit. In this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague and fellow member of the global ODR community, Dr. Sisana Shamishkabili. Welcome, Sisana. Really good to see you. Sisana is an international expert in ADR, international mediator, lawyer, neurologist and psychologist with medical and law degrees. We might have quite a lot to cover here, Sisana. You have been professor of the Moscow State University of Psychology and Education, holder of the chair in mediation and social practices, academic and scientific supervisor of the Center for Mediation and ADR and Legal Practice of the Moscow State Academy of Law. However, since the commencement of the war in Ukraine, Sisana has suspended all of her activities in Russia and tells me she's currently in Belgium. Since 2004, Sisana has studied mediation in the US, Germany, Austria, and in Great Britain. She's a graduate of several Harvard Negotiation Program courses, including Frank Sanders' mediation course. We might have even been there at the same time, certainly at Harvard at some overlapping time. She's a certified mediator in water diplomacy matters, which sounds very interesting to me because it's such a major issue, which is a joint program of MIT and Tufts, you say. Sisana is an accredited mediator, mediator of JAMS International in the USA and UK, member of the Association for Integrated Mediation, member of the European Advisory Board of CPR, council member of the Strauss Institute of Dispute Resolution at Pepperdine University. Yeah. You're well known to many of our colleagues in the States, I imagine. Associate board member of the GEMME, which I now find out is the European Judges Group for Mediation, which I didn't know about before, which is an intriguing body. It's fascinating. Yeah. I was interested to follow up on that. And a board member of the Association of Academics for the Promotion of Mediation as an Academic Discipline. Distinguished Fellow of the International Academy of Mediators, corporate member and expert for Dispute Board Federation. And I'm going to have to give an abbreviated version because your life is so rich. But you've been a pioneer in ADR, especially in mediation in Russia and in the former Soviet Union. And one of the things I'd like to turn to in a minute is your work on seeking to implement mediation and particularly what you refer to as a mediative attitude, and which something that I haven't really discussed with previous folks on this podcast. Currently, Sisana acts as an international expert consultant in ADR and is an international mediator. So welcome, thank you for joining us. I look forward to hearing about your work and what you're up to. Currently in Belgium, what are you engaged in these days, Sisana? What's your work at the moment?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. And if I may join you in congratulating and wishing all the best in the new year and the rabbit year, and I'm rabbit. Yeah. Myself, so all our audience and all our fellows, and let's hope that this year will be better than last year, and please, that it will be really better than we can expect, because we don't expect for something better.
We need all of that.
Yes, we still need hope always, as always, but also we need to make more efforts, maybe as much as we can, to make it happen.
For sure.
Also.
Yeah.
And thank you for this introduction. It was very long.
You have a very rich career, Sisana.
Thank you so much. And also what I can say is that, yes, one of my most focuses in, at least in last 20 years, was to implement mediation. And as you mentioned, mediative attitude and approach, especially in Russia and in Russian society. And I had real purpose for this. It wasn't only to implement mediation as something which will improve the access to justice, which was also the case indeed. But for Russia, it was not only an access to justice, but also to improvement of justice system in whole, which was not independent. And all what was worrying me, now we see, unfortunately, very explicitly what is happening in Russia and from Russia. And indeed, I feel very disappointed and very upset. And we all, all of us, we are responsible for what happened. I mean, people from Russia, for what is happening in Russia. And maybe even the world itself, because we have to hear each other and we have to see some signs of what has to be done. Sometimes it's not something which could happen from only internally, but sometimes it has to be nudged from outside as well. But at this moment, unfortunately, I have to say that mediation doesn't have place in Russia today. Oh, really? Today to talk about mediation in Russia, probably it's a nonsense. So when most of the society is supporting regime, of course, we can't say that it's sincere support, or it's support which is fueled by fear or some other negative feelings, or which we can't blame people for this. But at the same time, you can't talk about real mediation in the society which doesn't respect at least a right for peace and normal life for the neighbor country. And people who continue to live their usual regular life at the moment when their citizens and their army is violating everything in the neighboring country, this is impossible to even imagine, but it's like it is at this moment. Mm-hmm. And that's why from the beginning of the war, in the beginning of March, I had to leave. It was also because my activities, and I couldn't keep my, I'm sorry to say it, my mouth locked. And if I would say what I was thinking about this, sooner or later, and probably sooner, I would be detained. And so it was better to leave Russia and to leave my activities. And what I did, I curtailed my activities. But of course, I didn't stop my activities as international mediator and international expert and consultant. And using my mediative approach and following up the various projects. So I continue my activities as much as I can from different parts of the world. And I'm trying to maintain what I can do. I was trying to support Ukrainians also, but they are not so keen to accept, unfortunately, any assistance from people, and even people like me, who also helped to develop mediation in Ukraine, at least with what we did in Russia, it helped to Ukrainian mediators also, because we are Russian speaking, and till the beginning of war, it was quite a big part of Ukrainian citizens who still spoke Russian, and Russian was their usual language. So, but today I just have to keep up with my life. I have to, and I work a lot with the startup companies. And to tell you truth, from the I'm a very conservative person myself. And in the beginning of 2000s, when I felt that technologies become very important part of our everyday life, of course, it created quite negative feelings in me myself, because my life, I felt that my life will change very dramatically due to this. And at certain moment, I persuaded myself that it's unavoidable. But when you see that something is unavoidable, it's better to take, if you can't take leadership, control of it, and do something. And
engage with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I was one of the first, or maybe first person, who started to try to understand what is happening in ODR, in online dispute resolution. And we met several times with Eaton, because I used to go to ABA's conferences since beginning of 2000. And from there, I started to be part of this community as well. And it was about probably 7-8 years ago, I became the initiator also of implementing ODR in Russian federal program for digitalization of economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to draft the special legislation for this. And Yandex was involved in this. And maybe you heard what is happening with Yandex now, which is also obvious, probably, that the company had to flee Russia, and they had to split up, and now they probably negotiated that part of the company will stay in Russia, but another, the main part, and the founders will leave to Europe, mm-hmm. because the headquarters of the company was in Netherlands, in any case. But most activities was in Russia and Russian-speaking world. So it's like this.
Yeah. There's a number of directions in which I'd love to take this conversation, because you've given us a very rich view here. And I'm not sure what we've got time to cover, but if I can sort of work backwards, you talked of your pioneering role in introducing ODR, the digitalization of the legal system in Russia. Has there been progress on that in the legal system? This is quite apart from mediation. Leave mediation aside for a moment, but has there been a positive reception to digital technology in the federal court system and the legal system in Russia?
You know, legal system, if we are talking about legal, about law firms and things like this, of course, they are part of, first of all, there was a lot of international law firms in Russia before before war started. And they all operated the way like most of their mother companies operated. And they had lots of digital innovations already at place in there. Work, but regarding the state system, legal system, and the courts, we had a lots of discussions, especially in this federal, within these discussions about federal digitalization program. And federal courts, they were, from one side, they were very much resistant and reluctant, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some elements on which they agreed to, for instance, but I can't say that it was real online something. It was more about video conferencing,
sure,
implementing some kind of technologies in some parts of the litigation process and things like this. Mm-hmm. And still it was very complicated. And it's also something different from what was happening in the other parts of the world, which I can say that also for me, ODR from one side, and I was also involved in IPEC work. I helped Russian Ministry of Economy to become the part of all this, maybe you know, about the special program which was initiated by United States, and it was supported, and it was for for B2B and B2C businesses. There was standards and all this, and along with this, it was very important to understand what kind of ODR, private ODR systems we have all around the world, how we can implement, how different jurisdictions can use and can share all this, and how they can use it as mutual mechanism. And at the same time, in Russia itself, it was very complicated to really make people understand what ODR is, because immediately it was strived by some institutions to privatize it. So we tried to make legislation more, you know, like accessible for different kind of organizations and private entities, and to allow competition between them, to give, and it started first of all from the arena of the consumer protection programs. Yeah. And that consumer will have an opportunity to choose what is more comfortable, suitable for them. But at a certain moment, and Yandex didn't help us, because Yandex was one of the main, you know, like stakeholders in these discussions. They didn't want to be to have a lot to be forced to have a lot of changes in their operations. Mm-hmm. And that's why they insisted on something which will give you like very superficial changes, but at the same time, it will live the same way like it is. But at a certain moment, everything stopped, and till now, we don't have this legislation in place. Right. So the Duma didn't even probably hear it. So it wasn't adopted, and I think it's useless to adopt it now.
Yeah. Just imagine if I visualize Russia on the map, you think of the vast extent of it, and how appropriate ODR and digital tools would be to provide coverage for people who are separated by those great distances, as people in Canada or the US or globally have found. But there's a question, maybe this is not for this conversation, but it's something I'd like to come back to with you and others who work in this field, is the challenge of implementing ODR and digital innovation in times of conflict. And I know my Sri Lankan colleague Sanjana Hatatua was doing a lot of work in Sri Lanka during the Civil War. But I think there's a whole separate conversation on that, because there's also a degree to which ODR is a resource to use in times of conflict. But I can understand from your comments what the difficulties have been in just trying to implement those changes in the absence of political support, shall we say. Because one of the things that's come up in earlier conversations is the importance of having key, well-positioned political champions for ODR. And my guess is you don't actually haven't had that in Russia.
And you know what? There was the moment when I had such kind of support, some kind of support for mediation. For DR, no, because the moment when all this started in Russia, it was already a moment after annexation of Crimea. Sure. You know, and so political atmosphere was already changing. Maybe not so dramatically, but it was changing. And of course, it was not a real will. There was no real will for the change, for real development. You know, there was kind of. We have this notion in Russia from times of Emperor's Ekaterina that they used to build Potemkin's villages. Potemkin was your very close noble person who used to take you around this huge country, showing you how prosperous the country is, but at the same time, there was poverty. And he tried to just show your surface, very superficial kind of. And that's how it works, because Putin started this federal program because, and also there was kind of, you see what is happening now about how Russia behaves also in information field. Just to show that they have power, that they are leaders, that it's all about, most of the times about articulation, but not about real work and real deeds. Mm-hmm. So, this was all very artificial, not real. I did a real effort, but it wasn't what they wanted to have. This is one thing, and another thing, of course, when you do something very sincerely, you trust in it, and you are trying to put all your effort, and sometimes you don't see these obstacles and this kind of attitude also. Sometimes it's for better, otherwise we will never do something which is above our power or beyond our power. But at the same time, in such countries and such regimes, right, like Russia, probably it's not even safe, and it's not wise to do things like ODR in the sense which we know the ODR, because that's what I was, I'm worrying always, not only for Russia, but for ODR and for all these technological developments always, because ethical things are very important here. And with regimes which don't respect any individual rights, this becomes real issue, and it can become real issue because in any case, technology interferes our private life, our personal life, and especially when there is no real critical thinking among the public, and people, they are not educated about this, and nobody is even interested to educate them. They want to keep them as less educated as possible, and they don't aware where this data goes, how it's used, what will be the outcome, and what will be the consequence. In this case, ODR is not, and sometimes it's, we are trying to make it more, with ODR to make some processes and some something more accessible for the person, but at the same time, it can be, it can have the opposite effect, harming the person. Because if you are not controlling it, and it, if it's not done in proper way, then it's really dangerous. And also, you know, for me, I was born in Soviet Union, and since I became more or less, you know, mature, and when I started to understand something about the system, which was terrible, I was always questioning myself, are we for the state, or state should be for people, which was opposite. We were all like something what was consumed for the state, or for some political power who, and especially with regimes like this, you, first of all, you have to, and even now at the stage where technology, today technology is developing already, probably it came out of control of human beings, because it's developing very fast, very speedy, and sometimes, not even sometimes, you know, there was, maybe you heard, it was one of the genius of 20th century, Professor Landau. He had very tragic, dramatic life, but at the same time, he worked on nuclear program for Russia, and he was friend of Einstein. And but one of his students, who was academic and professor afterwards, Professor Yoffe, one of the great physicists of Russia, he said that maybe Landau was one of the last human beings who could embrace by his mind and brain all what was happening in physics, mathematics, and quantum physics, and so, things like that. Mm-hmm. Because now we have such a huge amount of information and knowledge, and we also don't know where virtual and real world is ending, and they're so mixed up. Yes. Yeah. And it's very difficult to distinguish what is what, and it's very difficult to identify which information is real and significant and which not, and what has to lead you in your life even. Yeah. And so it's very difficult in this case, and that why I'm saying about this today. Also, we don't have to forget, is from the beginning, technology was for the human beings. And we really did a lot with technology to make our lives better, more comfortable. It's reality. But at the same time, today, I'm afraid, we are getting to the moment when we have to question ourselves, and it's better we do it sooner than later. Is it already technology? Yes. Are we for technology? Because sometimes now we feel that technology becomes a power which is above us and which mm-hmm. rules us. And this is very scary. And especially in regimes where there is no democracy or there is no real control of society, and there is no real civil society which can at least understand and question the state and question the state institutions and agencies about what they are doing. So it's very, very, from my point of view, it's very scary.
Yeah. There's a number of questions that you've raised for me, and it takes me back to the conversation I had with Leah Wing in the second of these podcast interviews, because Leah, as you know, is very much involved in the ethics issues and standards. Yes. And is wonderfully articulate on those things. And it seems to me that you've introduced another dimension of the conversation about ethics, which I think we as a collective group of people in the ODR field need to pay attention to, which is, my thinking is not very clear, but it goes a bit like this. Our usual conversation about ethics in ODR is about access, transparency, authenticity, confidentiality, competence. It's about process issues and how we ensure that the standards of ODR are as good as or even better than the standards of face-to-face communication. But what you've made very clear also is that there's another difficult ethical component, which is the ethics of context. And if your political, social, other context is one which is, shall I say, challenging, then these preliminary questions become, or they don't become irrelevant, but they become only part of the conversation, don't they? To get the ethics of the process right is one part of it, but the part of the conversation that you have made very clear, for which I'm very grateful, is that our conversation about ODR is inseparable from the context in which it takes place. It's very easy to have a conversation about ODR where there is political stability, access to democratic institutions, a reasonable level of confidence in and competence of government institutions. But where that is not the case, it's much more difficult to talk about ODR in the way in which the last 13 podcasts have. So I think what you've done for me, and I hope for those who will listen to this, is make it a much more compelling and rich conversation that we need to have. And when you mentioned in your earlier email to me that one of the things that you would like to talk about is ethics and ODR, I was thinking, oh, well, yeah, the usual ethical questions. But in fact, your view of ethics is a much bigger and inevitably more political view of ethics, isn't it?
Yes, and also as a view of ethics on more, you know, from the point of view of civilization, you know, view of ODR, because we can, here we also can go for grades, yes, if we are talking about political contexts in case of what kind of structure, political structure you have in the places where you are trying to implement and use ODR. And also on more global level, when we are talking about, for instance, artificial intelligence, when we are talking about all these tools with face control, face recognition, and yep. things like that. And you probably know how many already in last 6-7 years, how many court procedures and just litigations took place in different parts of the world, and especially in the United States, for these mistakes which the human rights were breached and so on. But at least this, if this happens in the countries where you still have some kind of democratic procedures and independent courts, you'll have some hope that it will be solved more or less. But still, but at the same time, when I said that development of technology, it's almost out of control of human beings already, because it's like a gene which was out of bottle.
Great.
And yes, and this gene already has his own life. And even you, if you want, keep control on it, but you I'm afraid we are not able anymore. We just have to think about this as how we have to find the right frame and where we have to find the right breaks for all this. Probably. There was a very interesting study, and afterwards a book was published by, unfortunately, I don't remember the name of the author. I'm sorry. If you need, I can see and I can send it to you. But it was a book published by, written by Harvard psychologist. It was in 2011, probably. And the name of the book was Eye Disorders. It was about disorders from use of gadgets and all these technologies, but it was more than 11 years ago already, you know? And can you imagine, and by this book, you can see that even more than 45% of people who used in some way, who use technologies, some gadgets even, they were already psychologically disturbed.
Yep.
So it's it creates another question about hygiene, you know. Of course, it's not directly connected with ODR, for instance, but it's all in one context. Probably, because we have to be aware about all this. I may not, for instance, judge the other jurisdictions or other systems, but at the same time, for instance, you know that in China, they are probably one of the champions of online courts.
For sure.
And then they use vastly ODR in their court system. But you can see that there is no confidentiality.
And it's combined with a very extensive use of artificial intelligence and automated decision-making, et cetera.
Yes.
I mean, I'm hoping to talk to one or two of my ODR colleagues from China on this matter. But the question you raise, I mean, you raise so many questions in my mind, which is, you know, so good for me this early in the morning. but maybe a little late for you in the evening, but my goodness, my poor little brain is having to work hard. One of the things that you've now touched on, of course, is with the rise and in the exponential rise of technology, which is both wonderful and terrifying, is the question of regulation. And so alongside the questions we've just discussed about ethics in mediation, ODR, etc., is the question of regulation. And if you look at not just technology, but other industries where there's usually an industry-based insistence that they will regulate themselves. And rather than submitting to external government regulation, and the concern that I think you raise is that we haven't yet worked out how we're going to manage or be managed by technology, particularly as it becomes smarter?
Yes, and first of all, I don't think that there is any state which has knowledge and skill and experience to regulate in proper way technology, especially technology, sure, this complicated technology. This is one thing. If it's really a good state, if we can say it like this, they can make an effort and involve in this as much as possible experts. And it should be really multidisciplinary community which has to work on it. And of course, there should be big work on with the society itself. Because if we don't want to make society, maybe I will say it very straightforward, but if we don't want to make slaves from the society using technology, if we want to keep society as a society of human beings, we have to help them to be more critical. But it's not criticism as a goal just to be critical. No. Educated and like real meaningful criticism and understanding of what, because people, you know, there was one of the probably the fathers of pan-Europe, maybe you heard about him, it was Kugenhofer Kalergi. He was one of the fathers of the European Union, the idea. Yes. And there was many of ideas which was taken, and probably we are still just following what he was saying. But one thing which made me really very upset, but which afterward when I just asked myself, is it truth or not? He said that historical time, that main wish of the mass of people, of the population, will be just absence of suffering and pleasure.
Yeah.
Absence of pain and pleasure. You know, and today, unfortunately, what we can see, we are already more than 8 billions. Yes, yeah. The population of the world. And biggest part of this population, what is the main goal, if you ask someone? It's this. Of course, we don't want pain and we want to have as small as possible pleasures and happy moments in our lives. But also we don't have to forget that to stay humans, real humans, we have to make a little bit more effort.
Just reminded me that comment of yours when a decade or more ago, my wife and I worked on several occasions in Sri Lanka during the Civil War, worked for the World Health Organization on conflict negotiation skills for frontline medical personnel. And after we'd been there a couple of times and working in Civil War settings where people were remarkably resilient, just extraordinary. But my wife said, you know, what most people want out of life is to live an ordinary life.
Yes.
And for so many people, having the chance to live an ordinary life is a remote dream. But the other point you make is one which we're going to need to wrap up in a minute or two, but the important point which spans our ODR work, our mediation work, and particularly important in the context in which you speak, is the importance of education, not just it's not just standard school education, but what you've referred to as a kind of civic education, and how we can become better informed citizens. And you know, there's a question, not for this conversation necessarily, about the ways in which digital technology may assist us, that may also hinder us, but it may assist us in becoming better informed citizens. I mean, I know when I talk to my granddaughters, they're thoroughly informed and often misinformed by technology. They're full of information which comes from TikTok or Instagram or some place like that. But do you see in your more optimistic moments a role for technology in that civic education process?
It's not only that I see it like trying to, no, I can say that even since pandemic started, it has shown us that maybe it's one of the biggest advantages which technologies gave us. This is one thing, but at the same time, we have to be very careful about the quality of all this. And again, when we are talking about opportunities which technology gives us in educational, and first of all, it really gives an access to education, to very good maybe education, to people who even wouldn't dream for such kind of courses or something. But at the same time, you know, but I don't know, I can't tell you truth. I may be very idealistic. And sometimes, yes, you have to have ideals, and if you will make even few steps towards this ideal, it's already good. But at the same time, I don't know how to cover this gap, but at the same time, it's very important, first of all, to have good kind of orientation, leadership for people, because you can't strive for something what you don't know that it exists. Sure. And many people, they even don't know. There is so many sources to be educated, to know. And even maybe I will say very naive thing, you know. For me, when I left Russia, one of the, and still I'm busy with this, I have library almost everywhere, but there are some parts of the library which you can't duplicate. And for me, to have my library with me is one of the main, you know, it's my main worry, probably. And but at the same time, not so many people they used to read, for instance. Yes, and right. you can't expect that all people will be educated on the same level, or the level of knowledge or awareness will be on the same level. But at the same time, we have to help people to understand what is the price what they are paying if they don't make this effort, because it's something what they really need. Because if we want to become, I'm sorry to say it, if we want to become kind of biomass, it's one thing. And this is we are now probably on the right way to this. But if we will try to awake, maybe I'm sounding a little bit too alarming or so, but that's what makes me feel really, because I have, for instance, my grandchildren, and for me, it's very important that they read every day, that in their everyday life, there is a book. And for Absolutely. Me, it's very important that they are going to the library, to the state library there, searching for something what they want to read. And we always try to give them some kind of recommendations. And you know what, for people, it's, and today it's much easier probably, but at the same time, there is a gap between society itself and what is possible. The possibilities and opportunities, sometimes they don't meet the real, the user. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem.
Yeah. I'd love this conversation. You've raised so many questions for me. I could continue for another hour or so, but I'm aware that it's getting late for you. And so we do need to wrap up. What I've loved about this conversation, Susanna, is you've kind of started with ODR, you started with our core and shared concern, and taken us into a far wider agenda for thinking about where digital technology, the courts, ODR, mediation fit into political context. And while there's an element of, is it anxiety? I don't know. There's also what I detect in your closing comments. There's an element of optimism in that, you know, there's, you know, your grandchildren and mine who are still keen on reading and who must keep reading it. And for all that mine spent most of their time hooked to their digital devices, they're also mad keen readers. They'll read at least one book a day, and actual proper books with pages in them. So this, for all that your circumstances are no doubt incredibly difficult, I also see an element of hopefulness and optimism. You know, it's kind of optimism in the human spirit that I pick up from you. So I do thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
This podcast has been brought to you by iCoder, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about iCoder or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.